everyone, and thank you for joining us today. My name is Sarah Fender, and I lead marketing for PhoneFactor. And joining me today is Steve Dispenza. He leads engineering and operations for PhoneFactor. PhoneFactor is a multi-factor authentication solution that was acquired by Microsoft last fall. And today we're going to spend some time talking about the challenges facing organizations like yourself as you try to securely authenticate access into critical applications and sensitive data. So some of the challenges that you're facing and how PhoneFactor can help to address those. Today, authentication has a lot of moving parts, your users being chief among them. A growing number of workers are accessing resources from outside the office walls, and due to the BYOD movement, they're increasingly doing that. They're increasingly doing that across... I'm going to give him a minute to turn me down. Okay. So due to the BYOD movement, they're increasingly doing that across devices, personal devices, as opposed to laptops that you own and manage and have control over. Users are also connecting increasingly across unsecured networks. Your data and applications are on the move as well. You're moving your applications to the cloud and consuming more SaaS. And we're also enabling customers to access data and applications through online portals. Identities that were previously behind the firewall are moving towards more of a portable identities structure. With user authentication being highly targeted, particularly vulnerable, and we're seeing an increase in attacks and also an increase in the sophistication of those attacks. So securing access is more critical and in many ways more challenging than ever before. So stronger multi-factor authentication is really required, and regulatory agencies agree, and folks like FFIEC and NIST and even the payment card industry data security standards, HIPAA and healthcare, really across a number of industries are mandating that you implement multi-factor authentication. So just a bit of a primer on multi-factor authentication. There are a number of different ways that you can authenticate a user electronically. We call these factors. So the first is something you know. This is a secret that only your user would know. It's generally a password. It could also be something like a PIN that you use with your ATM. Something you have, so this is a device that only you or only your user would have and that's not easily replicated. So this would be a phone or a credit card or a hardware token, which some of you may be familiar with. And the third is something you are. So this is a biometric, fingerprint or voice print, retinal scan, that type of thing. And so the idea here is that any one of these factors independently could be compromised. And so where you get the security benefit is when you layer those things together. It's also stronger, provides stronger security when you verify those different factors across different channels. We call that out of band, and Steve will talk a little bit more about what that means in a few minutes. So some things that multi-factor authentication is not. It is not to something you know. So this is often the case with like security questions. So you have a password and then you're prompted to enter some security questions. Certainly having an additional verification, an additional something you know is helpful, but it's not multi-factor authentication. It doesn't provide the security that you get by combining two different factors as part of that authentication process. So some of the ways that you can accomplish multi-factor authentication, smart cards is particularly common among government agencies, but they do have some challenges, particularly as we look at BYOD. So the smart card, in order to use that, you have to have some kind of a reading device. And so if you have users accessing data and applications from a mobile device or a tablet or even their personal laptop, they likely won't have a reader available. So you're faced with either deploying readers for those devices or providing some other means of authenticating the user when they're logging in from those devices. Hardware one-time password tokens sort of dominated the multi-factor space for a couple of decades. I would say, and these would be like a secure ID token, a FOB, that emits a passcode that changes every 60 seconds. The user enters that passcode when they're logging in as a means to authenticate. Tokens are falling out of favor for a couple of reasons. One, they're pretty expensive. You have to purchase those devices. And then from a resource perspective, you have to provision those devices for all of your users. And the number of users who require two-factor authentication is growing, especially as we're pushing that out to customers and partners and vendors. And so the idea of purchasing and deploying devices, you know, to your global customer base, for example, or even global base of employees can be pretty costly, both from a time and a financial perspective. And because of that, we are seeing a movement towards software, one-time password tokens, particularly those that are installed on a phone. So the phone has an app that emits a one-time passcode, much in a similar way to the passcode that's output by the token. And we're seeing that move again because of the simplicity of deploying that to end users, not having to purchase and provision those hardware devices. I included certificates on the list, although Steve would argue that they are not, in fact, two-factor authentication. They really serve as another something you know. But they are often deployed for stronger authentication. There's some real challenges, though, again, as we think about the personal devices, installing certificates on smartphones is at best challenging and in many cases just not supported. And if you think about you know, deploying or your end users having to deploy or install certificates on all of the many devices they may be using to access your systems, that creates some real challenges. Biometrics are great, but they have been a challenge to deploy because it requires some type of a reader or something to kind of collect the biometric data. And so they really have been restricted. The use of biometrics has been restricted to kind of high security scenarios. You just weren't able to deploy biometrics historically to wide numbers of users. That's changing a bit as some new biometric methods are coming online, and we'll talk a little bit about what Phone Factor can provide as it relates to voice biometrics. And then the other is out-of-band authentication, which will be the focus of our discussion here today. So using an out-of-band phone call or text message or app notification as a means to authenticate the user. And again, you know, kind of the software OTP tokens and out-of-band, these are the two multi-factor methods that are we're seeing some movement away from some of these older, more traditional token-based methods toward software tokens and out-of-band because of the simplicity and the ability to deploy them to large global user communities. So Phone Factor leverages a device that all of your users have and carry with them already, their phone. And it works with the user's existing phone anywhere in the world that your user may be logging in from. It works with landlines as well as mobile phones and even works with office extensions. So if you need to call someone or authenticate someone at an extension, Phone Factor can handle that. It offers out-of-band protection from malware that may be residing on the user's endpoint device. That's increasingly important given the sophistication of the attacks that we're seeing today. Man-in-the-middle, man-in-the-browser style attacks defeat many two-factor authentication methods, and out-of-band provides protection against them. Phone Factor can be used to verify logins, which is pretty straightforward, but also lots of other things, financial transactions, password resets, any type of high-risk activity. And we've invested quite a bit in building out all of the tools that you as IT managers would need to set up and deploy the system, and that includes off-the-shelf support for virtually all of the applications you would be looking to secure, methods to centralize and streamline the deployment process, user management, the enrollment process. And all of this is backed by a scalable cloud service, which Steve will talk a little bit more about in a minute. So we do all of the heavy lifting as it relates to the telecommunications piece, which adds real value for this one less thing for you to be worried about. So if we think about securing corporate data and applications, here Phone Factor is being used to authenticate employee and contractor and partner access to both on-premise and cloud applications. And as I said, PhoneFactor's invested a lot in building these off-the-shelf integrations. So it integrates with Radius applications, so virtually any VPN, Citrix, Juniper, virtual desktop applications from Citrix, web apps, so things like Outlook Web Access and SharePoint, and many, many others. It synchronizes with Active Directory and LDAP for centralized user management. So you add a user to your directory, they can be automatically enabled for PhoneFactor. PhoneFactor also supports federated identities, so it works with Active Directory Federation Services and SAML to federate identities to the cloud. It also works with single sign-on providers like Ping Identity that are kind of focused on that market space or that scenario, the kind of hybrid on-premise cloud scenario. The enrollment process can be fully automated. Steve's going to kind of walk you through that process here in a few minutes. And at the end of the day, PhoneFactor delivers a significantly lower total cost of ownership because you don't have to buy and provision devices, because you can automatically enroll your users, because there's not much management or support that's required. We're seeing a lot of migration away from tokens and other forms of two-factor. And it does address the strengthening regulatory requirements for multi-factor authentication. And it can do so very quickly. We've had a number of customers who were facing an audit or were kind of in the midst of an audit when they realized they needed multi-factor. And because we can be enabled for large numbers of users very, very quickly, we're able to step in there and help them check that box from a regulatory perspective. If we think about securing customer data and applications, you know, here, PhoneFactor can authenticate access to online portals and applications as well as financial transactions. Here, PhoneFactor has some pretty unique capabilities. If we look at the example here, Julie's logging into our online account, and she does that with her username and password, just like she does today. And she initiates a funds transfer. But before that funds transfer goes through, she gets, let's say, a phone call from PhoneFactor. And during that authentication call, PhoneFactor plays details about her transaction back to her, so she can authenticate the specific transaction in question. And that's very important. There are a number of online banking Trojans that are able to sort of get underneath an authenticated banking transaction and submit fraudulent funds transfers. And this is really, this transaction verification is really the only way to prevent that. PhoneFactor offers a direct SDK as well as web services to enable integration with websites and custom applications. One of the benefits of PhoneFactor's out-of-band methods is that they don't require any changes to the user interface. So users don't have to enter a one-time passcode. So it really works seamlessly across all of the devices and all of the applications that your users may be logging in from. It scales to meet the demands of your large global user communities, and part of that is accomplished through the cloud service that manages all of the telecommunications relationships and ensures that the service can place a call or send a text message anywhere in the world. And phone-based authentication has really become the standard for authenticating customer communities. If we think about Xbox and Facebook, Apple recently released a version of phone-based authentication for their users, Google. So this is a process that that users are really comfortable with and that we're seeing used across a wide range of consumer communities. So let's talk a little bit about how that works. So PhoneFactor offers out-of-band authentication methods, phone call, text message, and mobile apps, as well as an OTP method. So the user logs in just like they do today with their username and password, and instantly PhoneFactor calls the user. So we place an automated voice call to the user's registered phone number. The user answers the phone and presses pound to authenticate. We can also send the user a text message that contains a one-time passcode. Instead of keying that passcode into the login interface, the user replies to the text message with the passcode to authenticate. So an example here is we're sending the text message and the user is replying to the text message, validating the passcode. And then PhoneFactor also offers mobile apps for iOS and Android and Windows phones. And those work, that method works by pushing a notification to the app on the user's phone. So just like if someone wants to be your friend on Facebook, you get a push notification that pops up on your screen. And the user simply taps authenticate in the app to complete their sign-in. Those phone apps or the mobile apps can also be used to generate a one-time passcode. So they basically work as a software OTP token as well. So most of our users are using our out-of-band methods and making the OTP soft token available as a backup method. So there are very, very, very few cases where a user does not have access to cellular or Wi-Fi access, particularly when they're logging in to access your resources. But there are some very remote corner cases, and in those instances, PhoneFactor can support those users through the soft token method. Okay, so we're going to switch over and do a demo. Okay. So the example we're looking at here is an older version of Outlook Web Access. Probably need to update that. but this is just an example. So really just envision any login interface here. Okay, so I enter my username and password, just like I do today. First, the system is going to validate that I have entered the correct username and password, so it's not going to call me unless that first factor has been verified. So the call comes in. I answer it.
Please press the pound sign to complete your authentication.
So it's prompting me to enter pound. And as soon as I do, I'm authenticated in. So it's very, very simple and quick and easy for your users to understand. No training is required. Everyone knows how to use the phone. So PhoneFactor has some additional security capabilities as well. PhoneFactor can require users to also enter a secret PIN number in order to authenticate. So this is not a third factor, but an additional layer of security verifies that the authorized user is in possession of their phone at the time of the authentication request. This is also good if you have like a shared phone in an office that users might be authenticating to, or if you're a bank and you're calling someone's home number, you don't want their kid to pick up the phone and press pound. So if those are scenarios that you're concerned about, the PIN method addresses that. PhoneFactor has a full system for automating the generation of an initial PIN. It manages PIN reset rules. If a user logs in and their PIN number has been expired, they're prompted to set a new PIN number during the authentication call. So this is just happens seamlessly when the user is logging in. Doesn't require any additional effort by the IT department. PhoneFactor is really cool ability to do real-time fraud alerts. So if you think about it, the username and password have been verified before the user receives the authentication phone call. And so if the user gets a phone call and they're not logging in, they know with certainty that their username and password have been compromised and someone is actively trying to use that information to log in as them. It's incredibly powerful. So not only will they not approve the login, and the attacker will be stopped, but they can take it one step further by submitting a fraud alert or fraud code into the phone, 911 pound, let's say. That instantly locks their account and notifies the IT department that an attack is in progress. So they can take some action. At a minimum, they need to reset that user's username and password. They may also want to do something, take some additional steps like running antivirus software. It's possible that there's malware on that user's computer that was responsible for either key logging their password or initiating a man-in-the-middle kind of an attack. So this is very, very powerful capability that really no other methods are capable of doing. So a hardware token may or may not stop an attacker from getting in depending on the sophistication of the attack, but it's certainly never going to alert you that there's a potential problem there. And then finally, we talked a little bit about biometrics before, and PhoneFactor offers a voice biometrics option. So the user simply speaks a passphrase into the phone during the authentication call to complete their login. So here, as I mentioned earlier, some of the challenges historically with biometrics has been how do you gather the initial sample, how do you gather the sample on an ongoing basis, and we can do that seamlessly through the authentication call. So it really enables voice biometrics in kind of a broader use cases. All right, with that, I'm going to hand it over to Mr. Dispenza.
Thank you very much. Trade your places. So a lot of interesting stuff going on here from a features perspective. I'm going to talk a little bit about the architecture. Form Factor as a product has been around for a number of years now, so it supports a wide variety of different cases. But this is kind of an overview diagram of a few of them. So we think of this as sort of two phases of authentication. There's what we call the primary authentication, which is kind of represented by the step one here. The user chooses to log into an app or a cloud service or, in fact, initiates a transaction of some sort. And the first thing that happens is the application passes that information, sometimes via Form Factor or sometimes directly, to the primary authentication source. So this is probably going to be AD, but we also support things like generic LDAP directories, RADIUS, and even custom applications. If the first factor checks out, if the password is right, if the authenticated session is valid, et cetera, then at that point the Form Factor agent takes control and initiates the second factor. So far all of this stuff is running on premises, out in your data center. This is the point, though, where the Form Factor software on site decides, hey, it's time to make the phone call, send the text message, send the push, whatever. And so it reaches out to the Form Factor cloud service. So there's sort of an SSL-based web services API that the Form Factor service exposes. And at that point, the service then places the call on the appropriate phone network or sends the appropriate SMS or communicates with the appropriate push service. User's phone rings, user presses pound, and at that point we unwind the whole thing. And I don't know if you noticed it there, but we unwound it the second that Sarah pressed pound in her demo. So I'll show this again in a minute. But we don't wait for the user to hang up the phone call. We can really know right then and there that it's okay to let him in. So it's kind of a cool user experience. A couple of different possibilities here, but ultimately this is kind of the architecture. It's a hybrid hosted service where pretty much all the interesting stuff lives on site at in your data center, and then the cloud service behind it is pretty much responsible for making the phone calls, text messages, pushes, and doing a little bit of accounting that goes along with that. So one thing that comes up, and I don't think I have it anywhere else in this slide deck, so I'll mention it here. Form Factor has been used for years in a variety of audited contexts, so things like financial and healthcare and government and related. And one of the ways that that works well is we store all the user data out on your site. We don't actually have a centralized list of your users or your passwords or so on. So there's very little, in fact, there's no PII that lives in the Form Factor data centers as a result of that. So audits are quick and easy. Well, as quick and easy as audits ever are. Okay, let's talk about how Form Factor integrates with Microsoft authentication. So there are kind of a variety of different scenarios. Form Factor has been around for longer than kind of the cloud, and so the majority of the scenarios are kind of on-premises based, traditional scenarios. For example, things like VPN access, terminal services, Outlook web access, which Sarah demonstrated, goes all the way back to at least 2003, and more. From the cloud perspective, Office 365, sort of an exciting new direction for Office, and because of that, because of the way Office integrates, we actually support Office 365 via ADFS on site. We also support Phone Factor for Azure Active Directory administrators. So if you're running Azure AD, your administrators can be set to require Phone Factor for authentication. Okay, so a little more detail now on three of the system components that were on the architecture slide a couple of slides ago. The first piece is what we call the Phone Factor agent. You really would think of this as kind of a service like the DNS service or, you know, IIS or something else. This is server software. It runs on Windows Server 2003 and forward and runs on premises. So this is designed for high availability, for, you know, sort of a master-slave replication model that's all taken care of under the hood, load balancing and so on. And this is where you manage the settings for the service. This is where you manage things like which users are entitled for are required to use two-factor authentication, which applications and so on are required require the use of two-factor authentication. This is where you set up synchronization and integration with your directories. We support a variety of different application integration mechanisms. So I mentioned RADIUS before in standard RADIUS proxying mode, or actually as a target RADIUS server if you don't already have RADIUS. So that would support things like VPN gateways and routers and switches and so on. IIS, we can integrate with virtually any IIS application in a variety of different ways, whether or not it's using forms-based auth, for example, or integrated Windows auth, or even a proprietary authentication running inside your web app. We also support a variety of other authentication endpoints, things like SAML, actual Windows authentication, so you can authenticate really any Windows application this way. And finally, the agent exposes a web services API that allows you to create custom workflows that include strong authentication for both provisioning, so moves, adds, changes, and so on, but also to allow you to directly add phone factor authentication to apps that you can code to. So if you have a line of business application that you that you can use web services client calls from, this is a great way to integrate strong authentication easily. The user self-service portal is designed to be user-facing. It's designed for self-enrollment and self-services. Again, this runs on your site, on your IIS servers. And it does all sorts of things like allowing users to add and change phone numbers, PIN numbers, select what mode they want to be. So of the three authentication modes that Sarah demonstrated earlier, which one do you want to be, does the user want to be? All of these capabilities are subject to administrative approval. So you don't have to allow your users to pick a mode if you don't want them to, but you can. You can allow them. And then finally, this is really the mechanism that allows really zero-touch provisioning on a per-user basis. So unlike, for example, tokens and smart cards where you actually have to manually hand the user a device or FedEx a device to a user or something and therefore have to take action for each individual end user, the Phone Factor system can be completely automated from an enrollment perspective. So I'll demonstrate that in a little while, but the basic idea is that you add a user to your directory, all of a sudden they appear in the Phone Factor agent. The system can even generate an email to them with instructions on how to activate Phone Factor and get themselves set up. So unless there are questions, there really doesn't have to be a phone call to the help desk. Finally, the Phone Factor Management Portal. This is a web application that runs inside the cloud in our data centers. And this allows you to configure things that sort of cross the different authentication methods and allows you to do things like customizing the voice greetings that users hear, running reports that span the entire system, that kind of a thing. So with that, I'm going to do some demonstrating. So what I have pulled up here is the Phone Factor agent. This is sort of a little bit synthetic in that it's a single server running in a VM. Normally, you would see kind of a list of servers here that have high availability enabled. And then you see a variety of different ways to configure Phone Factor for authentication. So things like supporting Windows applications, things like the Web Services API that I mentioned before, and so on. In particular, I have set up directory integration. So you can see here kind of a list of directories that I can synchronize from, the type. This is specifically Active Directory synchronization, but as I said before, we also support any generic LDAP for integration. And then, of course, you can also do provisioning via the web services interface if you have kind of a centralized identity management system like FIM or something in your environment. So you can see it's designed to pull users in automatically. I have it set to delete users as they're deprovisioned from AD, although you certainly don't have to do that, and so on. So the first thing I'm going to do here is I'm going to add a user. So this is just kind of, as I said, a test AD, but it's basically the same idea no matter what. I don't know. So I'm just going to create a basic user. I'm going to give him a really secure password. All right, and there he is. Okay, so back over here, you can see, first of all, I'm set to synchronize this entire user's tree from within the org. You can also synchronize on security groups, and in fact, even nested security groups and so on. So it's a pretty flexible system. I'm going to hit the Synchronize Now button since I just ran the user add, and that kicks off a background test for synchronization. So just pull up the log here. Since it's in the background, it's not a beautiful looking demo, unfortunately, but I'm just going to run down to the bottom of this file, maybe. The question was, does this support multiple forests and multiple domains? And the answer is yes. So you see we added this new user, and I didn't change the existing users that I already have in the agent. And note that he came in without a phone number. I didn't actually ask him to import a phone number. You can pull in phone numbers from AD if you want to. You certainly don't have to. A lot of organizations find that the phone numbers in AD are not necessarily the phone numbers that the users want to use for Phone Factor, right? They might be working from home and actually want their home phone number to be the one that's called. So at any rate, here I have a user. He's been imported. I'm going to open his user record up, and you see the phone is empty. And he's set for all of my company defaults, like using voice call instead of SMS or phone app. He's in standard mode, which means that I'm not prompting for a PIN. But you can vary all of these settings either on a per-user basis, a per-group basis, or company-wide. Per-group tends to be associated with security groups. So, for example, if you want a certain high-risk group to be using VoicePrint authentication and everybody else to be using just standard telephone calls or SMS messages, then you can accomplish that by creating a different security different synchronization item for each of those groups of users to get that effect automatically. So at any rate, that's kind of the provisioning piece of the Phone Factor agent. Now I'm going to switch gears and be the user. So what often happens here is users will get an email that says, here's where to go register to complete your registration for Phone Factor. There'll be a little bit of a description. You can, of course, customize everything about this email. But at the end of the day, we ask the user from within CorpNet, from within the corporate intranet, to pull up this web page and enter their domain credentials to finish the login. So if I typed my password right, and I didn't. There we go. Okay, so the system looks at the user record and can see, hey, this guy's not completely set up yet. He doesn't have a phone number. Let's get him enrolled. So I'm going to enroll my phone number here. I can, as you can see, I can enroll a backup phone as well. We support dialing into extensions, but for the moment, I'm just going to do this. So again, the same thing happens. We validate the user. We send the request to the phone factor service, which eventually sends the phone call out to my phone. So the next step of the setup is picking security answers. So I'm just going to make something up here. And that completes the user's enrollment and lets them into the portal. So from that point on, the user then, at any time in the future, the user can come back to this link and do a couple of different things. You can see we can change the method, so SMS versus phone versus push, multiple language support, security questions, and so on. The security questions that I just created, by the way, this is another feature that you can choose to enable or disable as an administrator, but it allows the user another possible backup. So again, if the user is out of signal for some reason, it prompts for the four security questions before letting the user in. You can also allow creation of a one-time bypass if the user is trying to make a connection, again, knowing that he doesn't have signal for some reason. He's lost his phone or something. The common case here is a help desk creating a one-time bypass for an end user to connect. Okay. So one last piece that I will demo is the management portal. And this will be... All right, there we go. So the phone factor management portal, this is kind of the service side version of the system. A lot of different things can be done here, things like usage reports. You can actually see, for example, another example, a list of the phone factor agents that are currently online for your company. I actually have another one sitting on my desk back at work. You can see a list of fraud alerts that were reported historically. I don't think I've ever actually done any. You can see, usage reports over time, that kind of a thing. It also allows customization of a variety of different settings. You can customize voice call messages. You can customize the kind of system settings around things like, do you want to allow authentication caching, where you don't require the user to rephone factor after a successful auth for a period of time, that sort of thing. Not a whole lot there. This is intentional. The vast majority of the configuration is done out on site at the phone factor agent. Again, kind of limiting the amount of information that the phone factor service has about your systems. Okay, after that particularly exciting demo, where do I go back to? Let's find out. Excellent. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Phone Factor Cloud Service here. So three of my favorite words, scale, performance, security. The Phone Factor Service is obviously a critical piece of your authentication infrastructure, and so it's designed for stability and performance. A lot of organizations talk about, three nines or four nines or so on. In fact, depending on the application, that could be very appropriate. We do continuous availability, so there are no outages for system maintenances or upgrades or things like that because authentication is such an important piece of your infrastructure. We support the very largest users. In fact, Microsoft IT is in the process of rolling us out to hundreds of thousands of Microsoft employees with close to 500,000 devices. Reporting and logging, I guess I didn't do a whole lot of demonstrating on that because it's really only one user, but the basic idea here is that you can create reports either on the fly or create reports that will be sent to you periodically over time. You can use this for audit and compliance. Incidentally, we also support integration with Syslog and XML-based log management systems. The system was really a clean sheet design from the ground up with security in mind. So a lot of kind of modern security engineering is built into the system, as you would expect. Things like strong authentication at both ends of every connection, cryptographic encrypted communications at all points in the system, and so on. And then, of course, finally, 24/7 support, because, again, this is a critical piece of infrastructure and has to work. So let me hand it back over to Sarah.
So just to kind of sum up what we've talked about today, PhoneFactor offers an incredibly strong security platform between its out-of-band architecture, the ability to add additional layers of authentication through PIN and voice print, fraud alert capabilities. All of those really result in an incredibly secure authentication system. Convenience for end users is really unparalleled, and this is so important, as we know. Kind of minimizing friction for users is important, and PhoneFactor does that by leveraging a device that they have and carry with them already. No user training is required. And even if we think about healthcare, for example, with physicians that are practicing at multiple facilities, carrying multiple tokens, the ability to use that single central, the device that is central to their everyday life is really a benefit from the user's perspective. And as we've talked about it, it's easy for IT to deploy and to maintain, and it supports a wide range of authentication scenarios. So both on-premise and in the cloud, both employee and customer, across all of the different devices and the different types of applications that your users may be using and accessing. And so that's a real benefit. At the end of the day, all of that results in a decreased risk of a breach, enables regulatory compliance, you can get it deployed quickly, don't have to do much work to maintain it. That convenience factor really ties to employee productivity. You know, users who find the authentication process to be painful may either look for ways to get around it or may just not bother with checking their email on their laptop or doing something like that. And at the end of the day, we talked about kind of the benefits in terms of the total cost of ownership, particularly over other two-factor solutions like hardware tokens. So with that, I'd like to open it up to questions. Before we do that, though, I just want to point out some resources. If you're interested in learning more about PhoneFactor, the website contains a set of online demos, so you can try any of the PhoneFactor methods that we talked about today using your own phone. There is a free version available for download that's good for 25 users or 500 authentications a month. And there are also a number of white papers and other resources, videos, that type of thing on the website. And just point out that that's at phonefactor.com. So while we are now part of Microsoft, we're still sort of operating as an independent entity. So we've got our own sales force and our own website. We'd love to hear from you. Please provide feedback as part of your session evaluation. Okay, so with that, do we have any questions?
I don't know. I do know that we've been deployed in NIST 800-63 level 3 environments, and I don't know if that is one, but I'd be glad to work with you offline to find that out.
Well, and in many cases, PhoneFactor itself is not certified, but we are in place in a number of audited and certified environments. And so my understanding with CJIS was that was the case there, where there wasn't an actual certification for our product in particular, but that we were deployed in scenarios that had been certified. Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of different ways to do that. First, I would say that I think you'll find that users are happy to use their own phone, their personal phone, to authenticate. It's just so much easier for them than carrying around a token. And anymore, you know, using 30 seconds on someone's cell plan or a minute just isn't a very big deal for them. So I would say that your users, you may find that your users are happy to use their own phones in those scenarios. But there are some other alternatives. So they can log into the user portal and change their phone number to the landline that they are going to be using. There's also a phone menu that's available during the authentication call. So at the end, after having authenticated, they can go into the menu and change their phone number. And so they can do that, change that to the landline, and then when they're back at the home office or whatever, they can change it back. So there are a couple of different ways they can do that. And it's pretty easy for them to do. So, you know, going in and just making the change is pretty straightforward.
I'd also add that the phone applications themselves don't generally cost users anything to use. It's just a push notification. And in those cases, I've never heard non-policy related pushback on personal phones for the phone apps.
Well, and increasingly people are using those personal devices for work anyway, and right. So the line between that has gotten fairly blurry for most organizations, not all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good scenario for either using a backup phone number. Right, so put the client phone number in the primary phone number box, and then if you go to another client site, backup will ring, maybe that's your mobile, and you use that login to update your user portal to the new primary phone. It's also a good option. Another good option is to use the Oath soft token if you've got a smartphone. And yet another way to do it would be, if this works for your security policy, to allow the user to use the four security questions. So basically, in that scenario, you're validating the username and the password and all four security answers before you're allowing them to update their phone. For some orgs, that's policy compliant. For some, it's not. But if it is, then that's another thing that works for you. Can the cell phone detect?
Yeah.
So we don't have detection for call forwarding, and in fact, it's something that we sort of explicitly try to keep working because we have a number of customers that use it. Normally, if you're an org that doesn't want call forwarding to happen, then the thing that you would do is prohibit it by policy, sort of along the lines of, you know, don't duct tape your secure ID token to your laptop, kind of a thing.
The other thing that helps to address that is PIN mode. So if you're concerned, if you're concerned about whether some attacker might be able to convince the phone company to forward your phone, which in fact is not very easy to do, but if that were to be the case, the attacker would also need to know the user's PIN number in order to authenticate as them. And so while call forwarding detection is a bit unreliable, PIN mode is not. That's going to work every time to ensure that it is your user at the other end of that phone, whether it's forwarded or not.
And to tie that off, one last point. So a lot of customers will use the phone apps if they really are absolutely sure that they want to lock it down by policy, because you can't forward a phone app notification. Yep.
There's some questions up front here, too, for a while. Go ahead.
Yeah, so what we would recommend for you is fall back to the soft token mode on the phone, and then, or alternatively, to the security questions. And it's, as a side point, when you're doing fallback like that, we always reach out to the first phone number first. So, you know, there is still sort of some insulation, even if you're worried about the case of a bad guy stealing your soft token. We're going to try the phone call first. So you give the good guy a chance to reject the authentication at that point. But that's what I would recommend.
Yes.
Coming.
Do you have a centralized administration of the agents that are deployed?
Yes. Yes, and yes. So, first of all, the agents that are deployed tend to be, there are two kinds of settings that would need to be managed. One would be kind of the actual end users, And that we tend to actually to delegate to AD. So we'd have you manage those users within AD, adding and removing them and picking the kind of two-factor experience you want them to have based on synchronization. But yeah, the form factor agent that I demonstrated, that user interface is actually just kind of an RPC client that connects to the whole form factor agent system on your site. And so there's really only one spot to go to manage the whole thing. On the right. I'm actually going to defer that to you. Do you have all three methods?
The free version supports phone calls and SMS. It does not support the phone app method. And I won't get into the details why. Phone call and text with the free version. The free version has some limited capabilities. It's got all of the integration support, but some of the more advanced things like Active Directory synchronization, those aren't included in the free version. So there's some limited capabilities there.
Can't comment about licensing yet. Yes, yeah. On the right. No, it does not. So it depends a little bit on the application in question. So radius-based, we're a radius proxy. We could run on really anything between your radius server or NPS or whatever you have running and your client. For LDAP authentication, same thing. We're sort of a proxy in the middle. So if you're doing bind authentication from a VPN device, for example, we sit in the middle and intercept the bind and add the second factor at that point. If it's terminal service, you deploy on the terminal server, and we integrate directly with TS on the box. So it just depends a little bit on the application, but no, it's not something that is generally put on the DC. Yeah. What's the application scenario? Yeah. You move the problem a little bit by having to deploy it on every DC instead of on every entry point, and it's not clear which is the greater number of servers. So, for example, if you have a two-server ADFS environment that sits in front of an eight-server domain, you actually have less trouble installing on the ADFS boxes. But to answer the actual question, I can't talk much about roadmap at this point. Yeah. Yeah, you can. Yeah, so you would pick which RDP servers you want phone factor on simply by installing phone factor on the RDP servers that you care about. Yes. Yes. It depends on what they're doing. So, for example, if they're RDPing into your DC, then you would install phone factor on the DC and enable it for administrators for RDP access. If they're what? If they are, it depends. The scenarios get interesting when you're talking about running like domain administration apps. Directly, but there's ultimately generally a way to protect each one of them. So I'd be glad to talk to you offline about what your exact scenario is. Back of the room?
Do you have any plans on the roadmap for integration?
So I can't really talk much about roadmap at this point. It's a topic that's on our minds. There was a question down the front. Well, that's a different question, slightly. So do we or will we? So is there a specific one?
Yeah.
So a lot of those we can do authentication with today. So if they support SAML, for example, if they support federated authentication using anything that ADFS supports, for another example, if they support web services callouts for authentication. So there are a lot of mechanisms that are already in the product and have been for a long time that might work. Exactly which protocols your particular cloud apps use would dictate whether or not we currently support them. But yeah, I mean, this is clearly an active area. All right. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah, exactly, like the demo. So TS Gateway is a common deployment for us. Over on the side. Yeah, you have PAM LDAP, for example. It depends on what your directory structure is. If you're talking about authenticating to a local password file, basically, there actually is a PAM module floating around that we didn't write, but that works. There's also PAM Radius for Apache. There's mod HTTP Radius. There's LDAP support for Apache. Then it starts depending on the app. Other questions? I thought I saw another hand up right there in the front row. Yes, primary backup. We try the primary first, we wait for its timeout, then we try the backup. In the middle? Not yet. Yeah, no, that scenario isn't supported yet. Yes. That depends a little bit on your multiple forests and your domains. The short and imprecise answer is that we resolve them the same way that your app would resolve them. Your app obviously has to have a way to resolve them. It depends on if you're doing things like literally AD forests, or if you're stitching your apps together with ADFS, for example. There are a lot of different scenarios there. I don't think we've ever run across one we didn't support. I could be more specific if you give me a little bit more specific of a scenario. So it depends on what your app on domain A is designed to do for authenticating the user. How does your app on domain A not to... Right, but it depends on which... We should probably whiteboard this. This is going to go down. This is going to get complicated. Other question? Yeah.
Citrix Web Access
Integration, no problem. Yep, Citrix Access Gateway, Citrix Secure Gateway, NetScalers, and then Citrix Web Interface natively, and actually I think also they call it now, ZenApp, that's it, what Presentation Manager turned into. So we've got all of them. Other questions? Yep.
Can the internal pages be branded?
Yes, the pages that you saw, the user-facing pages in the user portal can be skinned, I think it's pretty complete support, graphics and colors and things. You can also change the text on them. Sorry.
Service manager integration?
I have no idea. It is stored on-prem. We collect it from AD via a couple different methods, such as dirsync or just straight LDAP calls, depending on... It gets back to your multi-forest question. Depending on how authentication works between the form factor agent and the thing that it's replicating from, if there's explicit trust, then we typically will just use Windows service accounts with dirsync. But if it gets complex, it's often easier just to treat the DCs as LDAP servers and use explicit credentials. Sorry, say that again. Yep. Yeah, so it depends on the LDAP server as well. Some servers support deltas. But yeah, oftentimes if you're using just native LDAP, you're going to do a full sync, which turns out not to be the end of the world. You just change your synchronization interval. But yeah, it's a consideration, certainly. Yes, there's a service account per synchronization item. So you create multiple synchronization items in that case, and each would have a different service account.
But we store them in one
directory. Yes, we store them in one directory by SID on our side, or by global LDAP ID, depending on if we're integrating with LDAP or AD.
And it's all
right, it's all on-prem. Other questions? Okay. So we'll be around throughout the day here. And so just by all means, feel free to pull either of us over. And thank you guys who stayed for sticking it out.